good morning and welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. And it's promised none other than the governor of the state of Wisconsin, Governor Tony Evers. Good morning to you, Governor Evers. How you doing, sir?
Very good, Earl. How about you?
I'm always doing fine when you take the time out to call our radio station. It's always an honor, sir. Since the first
time you
became the governor, you've always been a man willing to certainly call this radio station, and we appreciate you for that.
Yeah, well, thank you. It's a good way to communicate with people, as good as it gets. So I appreciate your good work too, Earl.
Yeah, listen, let's talk about a lot of things going on, Governor Evers. You are at the forefront of moving a lot of moving parts, from more dollars going into the public schools to dollars going into different parts of this state to help people with water and all sorts of things. Let's talk about the initiatives that you are in the forefront of over the last several weeks.
Well, probably the most important one, and certainly the largest in the amount of money, is the money we've set aside and will be getting out to school districts all across the state. And it's about a $90 million upper. And it is obviously really important to have our schools and our kids educationally to recover from the pandemic. It was hard on everybody, especially our kids and our teachers. And out of the $90 million, Earl, $15 million of that will go to schools. And actually, it's a doubling down on something we did last winter, not too long ago, frankly, where we set aside $15 million for school districts around the issue of mental health to provide services to kids. It clearly has been a very difficult time for our kids. And so that original $15 million was for mental health. And we essentially, because of all the good work that was done and requests from school districts, we doubled that and made it a $30 million. So we added $15 million to that pot. And it'll go directly to our schools. They can use it for, it has to have something to do with mental health, and whether it's hiring staff, mental health staff, or contracting out, there's a number of things that can happen with the money to kind of boost up the mental health of kids all across the state. And of course, for Milwaukee being the largest school district, they'll get a large part of that money. And certainly, we've seen this play out in Milwaukee, but all across the state, where issues around mental health have really taken a front seat of importance, and we believe this money will help them.
You know,
so that's the first step. Yes.
Governor Evers, you have been in or around education almost your entire adult life. Can you explain, if it's possible, how there's an attack on you from people who are saying you're spending too much time and money in the educational system? Your opponent has said there's too much money being spent and more than enough money being spent on education in the state, as if there doesn't need to be any more. Can you explain what he means by that?
Well, I'll try. And first of all, I think it's foolhardy. The words directly out of his mouth was, "It is insanity." That's a definition of insanity to increase funding for our schools. And so I take that as that's a threat. That's a challenge to the system. You know, is education expensive? Of course it is. And we've had 8 years of Scott Walker where we had lots of cuts, and we've been able to turn that around, but we still have a long way to go. Investing in our kids is obviously the best thing for the future of our state. But investing in them doesn't just mean, you know, what happens in the classroom. It also has to do with how they approach going into the classroom, and that's where the mental health piece comes in. But also for our kids, and this is true any place in the state of Wisconsin, we need to connect the dots in a whole bunch of areas, and that includes, you know, affordable housing, that includes transportation, all those things that make a family well emotionally and fiscally, that helps kids in school. And so what my opponent apparently doesn't believe in public education to start with, but he, whatever the system is under him, it's not going to get any more money. It looks like it's going to get less, which is, you know, it's short-sighted politically, but it's short-sighted, frankly, in the ability for the state to move forward.
Governor Evers, the political assault on educators, on teachers, the fact that there are less and less educators to go around, what are your thoughts on that, sir?
Well, certainly it's been a really tough time. You know, people, educators are getting challenged everywhere on everything. And, you know, it's kind of a hangover of the Trump time. But, yes, it's just made it really very, very difficult. Teachers are getting challenged on the books they're using and how they address kids and whether it's okay to be supportive of LGBTQ kids. It's just a constant drumbeat, and what it's doing is driving people out of the system and taking jobs elsewhere. We do have a shortage, there's no question about it, and we're going to do whatever we can to reverse that. But one of them is very simple: we have to give teachers the respect that they deserve.
You know, Governor Evers, several weeks back now, you think $90 million or more into the water and well systems in rural areas. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, there's many private wells in the state of Wisconsin that and not just serving homes, but churches, bars, restaurants, you name it, and I think it's in the neighborhood of 80,000, if I'm not mistaken. And a lot of those wells are tainted with nitrates and other things that come off our farm fields. And so we need to, in order to fix a well that is in that position, it takes about $16,000. And we have a well compensation program now in operation, but A, it doesn't have enough money, and B, it's just too restrictive as far as who can actually access that money. So basically, we want to open it up. We are going to open it up into more people can request it, and we also obviously have to provide some money for the testing of that water. The last thing we want is some of our kids, especially, but anybody that works or lives in rural Wisconsin, to have water that's not clean. It's a real basic, and you know we're facing that frankly in our urban areas too with the laterals that have toxins in them. So clean water is a top priority, Earl, and we'll continue to advocate for that and work with farmers. Farmers are doing good things around the state to make sure that their soil doesn't head downstream into somebody's wells and then pick up nitrates along the way. A lot of people working on cover crops and other strategies to keep the soil in place and keep our water clean.
Governor Evers, let's talk about the investment in technical education and manufacturing training for young people across the state.
Yeah, we just expanded our youth apprenticeship programs significantly across the state to reflect the jobs that are out there right now. And so, you know, college isn't for everyone, and it has more to do with interests than ability level, because you know it takes a lot of smarts, frankly, to operate some of the machines that we have in advanced manufacturing. But I'm really jazzed about the fact that we have great apprenticeships available, youth apprenticeships that morph into apprenticeships. A lot of our union brothers and sisters across the state belong to unions that have apprenticeship programs, and so what we want to do is make sure that parents and teachers and kids understand options, all their options, whether it's going to 4-year college, 2-year college, tech school, what is out there. A lot of the jobs that require apprenticeships, in fact, all of them, I would say, are highly paid, highly skilled, long-term jobs that lots of young people are attracted to. And so we just want to make sure everybody knows what options are out there for their kids and for the kids to understand that, too.
So I know you got to run in a couple minutes, but let's talk about your record. You are running your record on your record. Let's talk a little bit about your record before we go.
Sure, absolutely. And it's all about things that I promised. Fixing the damn roads is one of the things, Earl, and we've done that. Obviously, we had a lot of Scott holes left over from the previous administration, and also we fixed about 5,000 miles of roads, and people know that, seeing all the orange barrels out there. We brought broadband to over 387,000 households in the state, and that helps them with telehealth and any number of other areas. And we've actually cut the taxes for folks about 15%, which is really important, and we've provided resources for our public schools. Obviously, it's not, we have 8 years to make up with for that, and we've been able to provide significant increase across the board to our universities, our tech colleges, and our K-12 world. And we've invested heavily in small businesses, whether that's in urban areas or outstate. We ranked number one in the nation in the percentage of federal funding that went to small businesses, because they're the lifeblood of our communities any way you slice it.
So, Governor Evers, I know you got to run. I will see you on Monday at Labor Fest. We'll be broadcasting live. Hope to see you then.
Good. Sounds good, Earl.
All right. Thank you, Governor Evers. We'll talk to you. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. I want to thank Governor Tony Evers, as always, for taking time out of his busy campaign schedule to spend a little time with us. This is Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. And Sandy, before we go to you, you know, you've got a competitor, Tim Michaels, who is seen on commercials saying, I don't have anything against gay people, but as long as they keep it at home and don't bring it out in the public.
Well, that's like a dog whistle. That's just a way to talk about it in a negative sort of a way without...
But is there a price to be paid for that kind of talk?
Well, I think there is. And I think that the Roe v. Wade reaction of women generally is just further evidence of the fact that when you take on a social issue that hits everybody in some respects, and the whole question of a right to the choose, a woman's right to choose with respect to her body is something that affects every woman ultimately and every family. But furthermore, you know, this whole question of transsexualism and gay, everybody has, in terms of just the question of gay, for instance, and gay rights, everybody has a friend or a relative.
I've got a brother.
Or a brother or a sister who's gay. And or everyone or is themselves.
Right.
And so this notion that we should attack and vilify or create fear about them is belied by anybody who is in that kind of a familial relationship and understands there's nothing inherently wrong, scary, anything about this that ought to be dividing.
And it's not
America's,
you're my business.
And it's not where our nose belongs.
Right.
Much like my concern about foreign policy is political policy. Let's keep our nose in our own business. And so, yeah, I think that these social issues, ever since Rex Reed got the American political scene all involved in sort of the puritanical issues associated with right-wing religion and began to focus just on that element of their spirituality is going to be a political mistake and is already proving to be one.
You know, let's go to the phone lines. Just put her on. Who do we have on the line? Hey, good morning. Is Caddy? Good morning. All right, so I don't know who. Are you there? Anyway, Sandy, I just think that there's a price to be paid enough already. People have a right to be whoever they want to be, especially in America, right?
Quite frankly, just decency. You know, human decency would have us not taking on these issues in the way that they've been taken on politically to try and isolate people, to try and vilify people based on
being different.
Being different and not being dangerous,
right?
Just being different, and so you know, I think that we should, if we return to decency, and I think everyone has some element of their being that understands indecency and decency, and I think that the indecency of all this in politics is going to bite the people who've tried to use it.
Sandy, I think you're saying that politically, there's a price to be paid for that.
Well, I think there's just a human price to be paid for it, and that human price will materialize in politics as well.
Right. So let's do this. Joe Biden, the president of the United States, spoke last night, and you know, I'll say this about President Biden. You know, everybody talks about him and his fading faculties. He stood there last night, and he spoke. And I don't think he was reading from any teleprompter. I think that was just from his heart, who he was.
Well, he might have read from a teleprompter, because every president who gives a speech does in the teleprompter, and that's hard to tell.
Well, they couldn't get Donald Trump to do that.
Well, to be honest with you, it's not easy. So, you know, a teleprompter is not a crutch that permits you to hide problems associated with your faculties, and I agree with you. I thought that he definitely maybe put to an end, at least for this point, the notion that there's something
he's incapacitated,
that he's incapable. He's certainly capable, and I thought that the fact that he came and gave this speech is a demonstration that as you and I have talked about it, America is in a very precarious place, and it needs to be addressed. You know, do I think it was necessarily the right thing to do to have a we they speech quite the way it was? No, I wouldn't have gone that direction, but in politics, I'm not a political veteran, and I don't know what speaks to the people and what actually gets action. But there's no doubt in my mind that there's a need to bring the people's attention to the fact that what's happening in politics today is very dangerous.
So listen, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. 844-967-2789 is the number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. Did you watch the Joe Biden speech last night? What are your thoughts about it? You know, clearly people are either on one side of this or the other. Do you think that Joe Biden, what he did, because I heard people say, well, he's dividing the country. Do you think that his speech last night is what divided the country, or do you think that the country was divided long before Joe Biden made his speech last night? And the last thing, people were saying, well, he's said he was going to be the great uniter. He's the great divider. What are your thoughts? Friday with Sandy Williams, 844-967-2789. We'll come to you. We'll be right back. Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. And as I said before, our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. Did you see President Joe Biden's speech last night, and what did you think of it? Let's go to the phone lines, and Gene from McClure. Excuse me. Good morning, Gene. How you doing? What do you say?
Good morning, Earl and Sandy, and thank you for the relaxing music to calm down before I give my opinion. That's a great idea, Earl. I love it. I'm doing that more often now.
All right.
I was very, very grateful for what he had to say. You know, because crimes have been committed in our country against all. And it needs to be brought forth. And he tried hard. You know, I don't know any president who would have put up with you know, him being illegitimate and all of the negative things that they were trying to do to our president that we legally elected. And he was calm. He tried to unite. He was more patient than I could ever be. And I was really impressed. And I think that he doesn't have issues, cognitive issues. He had some speech issues when he was young, and sometimes when he gets a little stressed, they kind of come out. Other than that, the sky's on the ball, and I really believe his experience during this time in our country is so important. He was used to working with those Republicans. He was used to going back and forth about the things that normal Republicans, Democrats used to go back and forth with. But this is totally different, and this continues as an attack on our democracy, attack on women, attack on voting rights, and this kind of thing, and our president has to take the reins and lead us through this difficult time. Thank you, Earl, for letting me express my opinion.
Hey, Gene, thank you very much for the call. Sandy, what about what Gene just said? The fact that there were different kinds of Republicans than what we are dealing with now, and
there are different kinds of Republicans now.
Right.
You know, there are the Mitt Romneys and the Adam Kinzingers and the Liz Cheneys, and there are the Mitch McConnell chameleons that are what they ever need to be to stay in power. And that's the problem, is we have a bunch of Republicans who know better. And have a different, probably personal feeling. I suspect over cocktails at night, Mitch McConnell will shake his head about what's going on, and then he goes out and stirs the pot because it's good for his political power and the political power he thinks of the party. But I think that it is important that Biden do what he did in terms of taking on the issue. I think what we can't ignore, though, is the fact that these Republicans, these MAGA Republicans, he threw an olive branch. He said, you know, all Republicans aren't MAGA Republicans. But the fact of the matter is that tens of millions of them are. And Donald Trump has struck the fear chord in tens of millions of people that has united them in these social political views that are apparently held by the MAGA Republicans. Make America Great Again is the oath they all take, which of course what does that mean? You know, and it basically is trying to take America back to what it is that these people are afraid it is no longer going to be. And, you know, we should unbundle that and try and figure out what are the things they're afraid of and try and defang those fears in enough of those tens of millions of people so that they could lose their grip on the Republican Party. It's not good for anybody. It's not good for the Democrats. It's not good for the country. It's not good for anybody, for a party in a two-party system, the Republican Party, to be in the grips of the political views of the MAGA Republicans, these people. But we have to try and understand why they have those views, and we've got to avoid we-they-ing them into a corner so they keep those views. And you know, some of them are clearly fear. Some of them are social cultural fears. Some of them are racial fears. We have a lot of learning in America to do in order to get ourselves into a position where we can have a healthy political system.
You know, Sandy, we've got MAGA Republicans that we know are listening as we speak now. And so fear is something that all of us experience, not just MAGA Republicans.
Sure.
It's a human condition. And, you know, you can say that there are people who are fearful, who live in urban centers across the nation that, you know, they're not going to be able to keep a roof over their heads.
Well, sure. I mean, you know, the we've had the fear expressed to us by conservatives that there are people, the liberals, who are going to try and tear apart the American culture as they know it and make America a country that isn't what they want.
Or take their guns away.
Right. You know, they can express those fears. But, of course, you come from a community that has lived in fear a great deal. You know, the inner cities of America have violence around them. They've had situations with the police that have put them in fear, actually, of the police.
Right.
Everyone understands the not concept of being arrested for being black while driving DWB. It's a joke, right?
Yeah.
Driving while black, but all you have to do is be in one of the suburbs and see a car pulled over, and if you look at it, there's a high likelihood that the driver of that car will be black.
So this is why I'm saying, Sandy, so everybody has fears in the society, and you don't then turn around because you're afraid.
Mm-hmm.
And then do something that impacts and affects somebody else's life.
Well, that's to judge what people do out of fear. I think that what's happening with the MAGA movement is reprehensible in terms of the conduct that's what's happening. Totally unsubstantiated notion of voter fraud that's being used to try and affect the system and to seize control of the system contrary to the interests and rights of many, many people. But we have to get to the heart of why they're doing it. Why are tens of millions of people doing this? If we don't get to the heart of that, solve for it, defang it, change that view, America will have a cancer. And that cancer will be that we will have tens of millions of people, many of them armed with AR-15s and others, who believe that America is being torn away from them and needs a revolution to solve this
problem. But how can you have the dialogue and conversation with them as long as the chief orchestrator amongst them is still around, still stirring the pot? And so there is no dialogue you can have.
Well, if we can find a way to talk to them directly and talk around this person they've grabbed a hold of. I mean, Donald Trump has plenty of spots, and people who stand, and even the people who follow him will laugh about the fact that he is really in this odd duck. So we have to find a way to reach out to these people without isolating them and putting them into the concept of, for instance, being the deplorable that Hillary Clinton made the terrible mistake of doing during her campaign. And they need to be spoken to, and by that I mean not talked at, but reached. in the context of a conversation so that they can understand that there's a value to be derived by being an active participant in this society. The society is not in jeopardy. It's not going to be fractured in a way that's going to endanger them. It's going to benefit them.
You know, Sandy, you're saying it requires some special attention be given to this group of people to reassure them that, you know, there is not a public assault on you guys.
Yeah,
right?
and is it special attention or is it just the kind of empathetic attention that everyone in the country has the right to and needs to be understood? And maybe the fact is that there's been a lot of attention paid to some folks and their plight and not enough attention paid to others. We've talked about in earlier shows, the unemployment in Wisconsin Rapids after the paper mills shut down was as dramatic and a hurtful a problem as much of the unemployment in the city of Milwaukee was. But those people felt like all the attention was being paid to people in the city of Milwaukee, and it turned them into Trumpites. Well, if it turned them into it, that happened essentially overnight. They voted for Obama in 2000 and what was it, eight. And 12, yeah. And then they voted for Trump in 2016. So these things can happen rather quickly. You can reach people and affect them if you can reach them.
Well, so I would say, Sandy, that people have to be willing to be reached. They have to be open-minded, and they have to themselves be willing to listen to what the other side of things.
Well, but psychologists would tell you that when people flood with fear, they shut down and can't listen. And that's what happens in arguments. That, you know, you get this when you go into counseling. And so I'm just saying that we've got a psychological problem in this country, you know. It is we ought to recognize that, and we've got it. We should deal with the people out there, and we need to defang the problem. I am very glad that President Biden gave the speech, talked about the issue, addressed it as the very fundamental and important issue it is. And I just think we need to get to work on the issue in a variety of ways. One is to make sure that the voters turn out in a manner to make sure that the people who hold these negative views don't get elected. But then we also have to defang and deal with those negative views.
So Sandy, so we have a problem politically that in the highest levels of government there can't be dialogue and conversation. Democrats and Republicans at the governmental levels can't, you know, that divide exists.
Yeah.
So how can we expect it on the
Well, it's leadership. You know, we've got to make this vilification of liberals, this notion that liberals are un-American, the kind of thing. Ted Cruz and these people are playing that card all the time. When they talk, whether they say it absolutely directly or whether they make the implication so clear in the indirection that they use that everyone understands it. But we've got to get back to the fact that political disagreement does not constitute un-Americanism. And, you know, the fact that our country couldn't tolerate Colin Kaepernick taking a knee over an important issue during the national anthem, that constituted essentially a national crime, you know, that was a sorry state, and that was a demonstration that we were definitely in the wrong position and in the wrong condition.
So, Sandy, if there are people who say, I can't think for myself, and unfortunately, we do have people who are like that, who are willing to just follow what is being said, be it a Democratic elected official or a Republican elected official. And so I jump on that. How do we begin to get those on the highest level of government? I think you've got to fix that first before, and we should expect them to be
fixed. if we deal with it, if the politicians who recognize it as a problem are capable of reaching out and talking to the people who are right now enabling it by supporting it and supporting those politicians will lose support and they'll suffer the consequences of the indecency of their behavior.
So there is no quick fix to any of this. The fear factor.
Unfortunately, quick fixes usually have a trigger.
well, but Sandy, if we don't hurry up and figure something out, there's an election in a few months.
Ah. Well, we definitely have to have it. And I think that's what Joe Biden was doing, was taking this in terms of the election, saying we've got to make sure that in the election, the people who get elected are not these people who are jeopardizing the democracy. And so I do understand that. And there is a we-they aspect to politics in that regard, because we, the people who agree, have to vote, and we hope we have more votes than they do.
All right, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. Sandy, out of everything that President Biden was talking about on yesterday, and people can debate yes and no on some of those things, but the one thing that nobody can debate yes and no about is just where this thing is headed and where we are if something doesn't happen to turn this around.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, people could think this is just political theater, this is political hyperbole. It's kind of like, is it just like the Donald Trump allegations of voter fraud without any basis? And is Joe Biden just doing the opposite and saying, look, these MAGA people are threatening democracy when in fact all they're doing is exercising their political rights? No, what's happening right now is threatening democracy. What happened on January 6th was a direct threat on the political system. And it didn't have to go very much different than it went for us to have seen directly on that day what a very, very perilous situation the American democracy is in. But it continues to be in that situation. We've got this whole work on changing the way people vote is the kind of machination that goes on in countries that end up being autocratic. I mean, in the year 2000, Russia had very much open elections. And by 2010, the process had changed and the elections were no longer meaningful based on the way that they had been set up and basically rigged. And the way they were rigged was to affect how votes were counted, etc. The actions that are being taken today are all actions which are said to be actions to protect the American Republic, but what they're really doing is jeopardizing the American democracy and potentially moving America in the direction of an autocracy. We have these states talking about opening up a constitutional convention for the purpose of rewriting the American's Constitution. We've had everybody in politics has run around for centuries, and not just decades, championing the American Constitution as a miracle, something that has created the potential that this country has. And now we have people who find it not satisfactory because it doesn't permit the kind of conservative activities they want. It doesn't permit the intrusion of religion into our public life or whatever.
You know, Sandy, had a gentleman on yesterday who wrote a documentary challenging what we all saw. And so there are people who, on January 6th, But there are people who still believe what this gentleman wrote in this documentary. Many of them called on yesterday, saying that, you know, that was just a peaceful gathering. And you know, and the...
Well, if it was a peaceful gathering that was calling for the hanging of Michael Pence because he wouldn't do what he wasn't permitted to do under the Constitution, which was to unilaterally decide that the electoral votes as sent to Congress to be counted by the states was to be rejected because the vice president supposedly theoretically had the power to simply do what he wanted to do, that whole construct belies the notion that this is a peaceful gathering. This was a gathering with a purpose and with an excitement and a fire that was burning because they wanted to have something accomplished which wasn't constitutional.
But Sandy, those were MAGAs.
Those were people who were stirred up by a leader who had struck their notion of fear. These were people who wanted to take a hold of the constitutional reins and change them because they were so fearful.
He's still stoking that, though.
But yes, and they were so fearful about what the danger to this republic was if a liberal like Joe Biden got into power.
But that still exists.
Yes, and that's why I say two things. One, we have to make sure that the people who feel like that don't get elected into power. And two, we have to find ways to make them not feel like that, because there are too many of them who feel like that. We've got 30, 40 million, 50, what's the head count? It's tens of millions of people who are in this sort of stridently fearful position. We better solve it, because it doesn't take many more people than that to set up an autocracy. That's an army that you can't defeat with military
might. So, Sandy, I would say to you then, what are they asking for? You know, these people are asking for something. And what they are asking for is, this is the way we want it. And so if the way they want it is to, then the you can talk about the 74 million people who voted for Donald Trump.
No. But yeah, yes. Yeah,
but at the root of that is they keep talking about that 74 million or 81 million that voted for Joe Biden. Do we just, at the expense of the 81 million, do something to accommodate the 74 million by giving them what they want, and then the 81 million, the majority voted?
Well, I mean, if you listen to Lou from Cudahy and others who've called in, the people who feel so stridently are because they are afraid that the country that they hold so dear,
I understand that.
So much, is going to collapse and change and become something that is
unacceptable
to them. So those people are willing to essentially be a part of a revolt. And whether that's a revolt that involves munitions and guns, or whether that's a revolt that involves highly willful conduct to restrict the vote of those who would take the republic away from them, I mean, we're seeing gradations of that revolt. It's starting with this very cynical approach to making voting difficult so that those people don't vote in such big numbers. You know, the fraud, I think if we really sat people in a room who assert that there was a fraud in the last election, they would assert that the fraud was that 81 million people voted. They don't even say those people didn't vote. They just say, well, those votes were harvested, people were talked into voting.
Sandy, they lost an election.
All of those people voted. I'm just trying to talk about the fearful thing. And so they're saying, you know what, we got to make sure that in the next election, those people don't vote in such numbers.
So the 81 million of us who voted the other way are concerned about those people, and we're concerned about what's the outcome if things don't go their way again.
Well, Joe Biden did the right thing. We got to make sure that the 81 million people who voted that way vote that way again.
Right.
But we also have to try and make sure that we defang and reduce the concerns and fears of the 74 million or however many of those were voting out of fear. Reduce their fears about what the consequences are.
Sandy, we've got a divided nation. I don't know how you fix the divide. divided nation.
Well, we better...
Hold on, we gotta go to a break quickly. 844-967-2789 is the number. We'll be right back.